and addressed in the usual Gothic letters to the very distinguished lady, Doña Fernanda del Carpio de Buendía. While she read the letter in her room, the children hastened to open the box. Aided, as was customary, by Aureliano II, they broke the seals, opened the cover, took out the protective sawdust, and found inside a long lead chest closed by copper bolts. Aureliano II took out the 8 bolts as the children watched impatiently, and he barely had time to give a cry and push the children aside when he raised the lead cover and saw Don Fernando, dressed in black and with a crucifix on his chest, his skin broken out in pestilential sores and cooking slowly in a frothy stew with bubbles like live pearls. A short time after the birth of their daughter, the unexpected jubilee for Colonel Aureliano Buendía, ordered by the government to celebrate another anniversary of the Treaty of Neerlandia, was announced. It was a decision so out of line with official policy that the colonel spoke out violently against it and rejected the homage. "It's the first time I've ever heard of the word jubilee," he said, "but whatever it means, it has to be a trick." The small goldsmith's shop was filled with emissaries. Much older and more solemn, the lawyers in dark suits who in other days had flapped about the colonel like crows had returned. When he saw them appear, the same as the other time, when they came to put a stop to the war, he could not bear the cynicism of their praise. He ordered them to leave him in peace, insisting that he was not a hero of the nation, as they said, but an artisan without memories whose only dream was to die of fatigue in the oblivion and misery of his little gold fishes. What made him most indignant was the word that the President of the Republic himself planned to be present at the ceremonies in Macondo in order to decorate him with the Order of Merit. Colonel Aureliano Buendía had him told, word for word, that he was eagerly awaiting that tardy but deserved occasion in order to take a shot at him, not as payment for the arbitrary acts and anachronisms of his regime, but for his lack of respect for an old man who had not done anyone any harm. Such was the vehemence with which he made the threat that the President of the Republic cancelled his trip at the last moment and sent the decoration with a personal representative. Colonel Gerineldo Márquez, besieged by pressures of all kinds, left his bed of a paralytic in order to persuade his former companion in arms. When the latter saw the rocking chair carried by 4 men appear, and saw the friend who had shared his victories and defeats since youth sitting in it among some large pillows, he did not have a single doubt but that he was making that effort in order to express his solidarity. But when he discovered the real motive for his visit, he had them take him out of the workshop. "Now I'm convinced too late," he told him, "that I would have done you a great favor if I'd let them shoot you." So the jubilee was celebrated without the attendance of any members of the family. Chance had it that it also coincided with Carnival Week, but no one could get the stubborn idea out of Colonel Aureliano Buendía's head that the coincidence had been foreseen by the government in order to heighten the cruelty of the mockery. From his lonely workshop, he could hear the martial music, the artillery salutes, the tolling of the Te Deum, and a few phrases of the speeches delivered in front of the house as they named the street after him. His eyes grew moist with indignation, with angry impotence, and for the first time since his defeat, it pained him not to have the strength of youth so that he could begin a bloody war that would wipe out the last vestiges of the conservative regime. The echoes of the homage had not died down when Ursula knocked at the workshop door. "Don't bother me," he said. "I'm busy." "Open up," Ursula insisted in a normal voice. "This has nothing to do with the celebration." Then Colonel Aureliano Buendía took down the bar and saw at the door 17 men of the most varied appearance, of all types and colors, but all with a solitary air that would have been enough to identify them anywhere on earth. They were his sons. Without any previous agreement, without knowing each other, they had arrived from the most distant corners of the coast, captivated by the talk of the jubilee. They all bore with pride the name Aureliano and the last name of their mothers. The 3 days that they stayed in the house, to the satisfaction of Ursula and the scandal of Fernanda, were like a state of war. Amaranta searched among old papers for the ledger where Úrsula had written down the names and birth and baptism dates of all of them, and beside the space for each one, she added his present address. That list could well have served as a recapitulation of 20 years of war. From it, the nocturnal itinerary of the colonel from the dawn he left Macondo at the head of 21 men on his way to a fanciful rebellion, until he returned for the last time, wrapped in a blanket stiff with blood, could have been reconstructed.